First, I have to tell you, writing is a reactive art. I don't know of anybody who gets up in the morning and says, I think I'll write a novel about things not being as they are, or about somebody who thought this and found out that it wasn't. People don't understand or don't realize that what their idea of mentally ill are a tiny minority of us. Most of us get up off the floor, spit out the carpet, and get on with it.
You are fascinated and always have been by difference. Unless I'm wrong, you wrote a book about the signs, which was about people who are hard of hearing. Then you did the Monday Voices, which is about people being rehabilitated. Yeah. Rose Garden is about people being different.
Yes, I don't know my own... I have never examined my own trail that I leave.
An iceberg has a huge bit on the top and as much below.
Yeah.
And that is how I see appearances. I think appearances is the iceberg you see above the water, and Rose Garden is the iceberg below the water.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I think that what you seem to be saying is you can look at people and they can look normal, but don't forget the iceberg under the water.
Well, it is interesting. Again, parts of what I wanted to say were experiences. Of course, as you're writing, all the experiences that come in while you're writing, and memory and facts. There's a psychological problem. There's a
physical
one. There's a technical writing problems. There are all kinds of other things that come into it. But it's why I chose to be a ski lawyer.
The character in the book is a ski lawyer.
Is a ski lawyer. Well, I have...
You have a friend
who was tops in his line. And I trained with him for about 3 years, reading all his cases. It nearly took me off the slopes, by the way. Because you can read all of these cases. But then you learn parenthetically. That's why I don't think I miss the computer that much. It'll give you information. But where do you get that extra part?
Now you finished appearances, and that was obviously something you lived and breathed for a long time.
Yeah.
Are you working on your next novel?
Oh, sure.
You work every day?
Yeah.
And are you religious about it? You get up in the morning, sit down, you slept on it? And you have discipline?
Yeah.
And do you write with a pen and a yellow legal pad?
Pencil and yellow legal pad.
Pencil?
Yeah.
Do you correct as you go along?
Psst.
And then who types it all for you?
She does.
You do?
Yeah.
So you write in pencil?
Underwood.
What?
Underwood.
What do you mean?
Not even an electric typewriter. I can't use an electric typewriter.
So you need the typewriter.
They stutter.
And
do
you change? So you write in pencil?
Well, yeah.
Then you type your own work onto an Underwood typewriter.
Yeah.
And you revise as you go along?
Yeah.
And then when you have a draft...
That's why there are so many strikeovers. I am a trained typist, and I have ruined very good training that I got from Mrs. Showaker in 1955, when I went to college. And I ruined that because I have so many strikeovers. And because you can't concentrate, you have to concentrate on your typing if you're going to be a typist. And so you can't be revising. That's why it looks so bad.
But you and Dickens and Thackeray and everyone, revising is a very important part of the process, surely.
Oh, more than the writing.
So now Appearances is out, so you must have written that 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So presumably your next one
longer
is finished.
Longer than that.
Longer than that.
Yeah, longer
So your
than
next
that.
One is nearly finished? Is it just going
next
to press?
Next one is finished. I don't want to bankrupt my present publisher, so I'm holding that quietly. Then I'll spring it on him.
Is there any scenario you haven't tackled yet that you'd like? You don't do politics, except you do sociopolitics.
Sociopolitics, but not politics. I have you've just pulled me back to a thing that I went through years ago. I think that politics is, in a sense, an enemy of what I do, in that politics is interested in masses and groups and blocks, and I am interested in single persons, usually.
Is it fair to say you're interested in the survival of the individual?
Probably.
In extremis?
Yeah, usually. But I don't do sex well. At all.
You mean in your books?
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah, well, I kind of feel like it's been done already. I could look at, I mean, there was for 30 years the sex part of every novel. There was, you know, the obligatory scene. And some of it was so beautiful. I thought, gee,
you could be the next Jackie Collins.
It's already done.
You once said something very fascinating about mental disturbances, disorientations, illness. I think you were very annoyed by the Timothy Learys in the 60s.
Screamingly so.
Because you thought it was irritating that people thought of mental illness as a sort of fount of creativity.
You got it.
When you said, in fact, you know, you could be creative in that state, but it's clearly not the way to go.
No, it's obvious that creativity makes bridges, bonds, links. Mental illness cuts, surrounds, makes a fort, which turns out to be a prison. It's the opposite to me. And, I mean, here were people in the 60s, which was part of the motive force for Rose Garden, taking LSD to give themselves artificial insanity.
I think Rose Garden was an extremely important book. I always wanted to have a dinner party with you and Doris Lessing, Briefing for Descent into Hell. I thought we'd have Iris Murdoch for good fun to be philosophical and give us a Donish approach. And then I thought we'd have a seance with Aldous Huxley for Doors of Perception.
Doors of Perception.
I think if you write a book like Rose Garden, people expect you to be dribbling in a corner, don't they?
It has been told me. People who didn't know that I wrote the book tell me all about how I committed suicide and I know her. She's hopelessly insane. And in fact, when the people made the movie, I got a call from B.B. Anderson, who was in the movie, 7 o'clock in the morning. It's 4 o'clock in Sweden or someplace. And, you know, I'm not quite there. And she said, oh, I wanted to talk to you. But the directors told me that you are hopelessly insane. And I talked to your Swedish publisher and said what a pity it was, you know, it was such a pity. And he said, well, I don't know, I saw her 2 weeks ago. I don't think it was a pity.
People must be very disappointed. When you were at the tattered cover, did people think you would be sedated or...?
Well, I mean, it's a surprise. And they are disappointed because I'm... so ordinary.
You are hugely creative. You must be phenomenally disciplined to work like that. That is not a sign of loose mental strictures.
No, I'm not. And I was even more disciplined when I did Fire Rescue here all those years. And before that, I taught school.
I wonder, in Rose Garden, the point of the book was, unless I've got it very wrong, that Frieda from Reichenau,
yeah,
treated you without pharmaceuticals.
Correct. There were none in those days.
There were none in those days. So this puts you... I mean, Tom Cruise has got this thing about don't take any drugs.
No, I would never, never say that, ever. Tom, beloved...
Have you met him?
No. He never met me either. Everything they say about us is a lie. If you are not going to use chemical restraint, you're going to have to use mechanical restraint. The day of the straitjacket was not a good day. So, I mean, who wants that? But I think that what those drugs are is a kind of chemical control.
Or support.
Or support. But that's not treatment.
But Rose Garden was only semi-autobiographical, wasn't it? The other members of the family in the book, mm-hmm. What we never got from the book afterwards,
yeah,
was that your relationship with them must have progressed to some
point. Yeah, sure. That would be Son of the Rose Garden or Bride of the Rose Garden, and I never wanted to do that.
But that was...
Well, and now, what they're saying now, of course, really makes me want to scream. that it's a brain disorder. I think this is a very bad thing to have, because from the age of 6 till the age of 18, 17, I was, to all intents and purposes, elsewhere. I mean, you're missing a tremendous amount of life experience, figuring out other people's motivations.
But your period, I mean, it's almost like Le Grand Moon, you know, that period of loss.
Oh, God, you
time.
Mentioned that old, fine old book. It's what a beautiful book that is.
That was a beautiful book. But yeah. I see your period, because I'm romantically inclined, that period you talk about from 8 to 16 as a lost period, as also a great treasure trove. What was it, flat and desolate?
Flat and desolate.
It was only flat and desolate.
Only
all that time.
Now, I'm not saying, you know, did you have one day? Yeah, you had moments, minutes, but basically going nowhere.
And did you write for escape?
Yeah, I wrote for a whole bunch of reasons. And
did you have secret journals? Did it help
you? I didn't do journals, I just did poetry.
What, Sylvia Plath? Did you like people like that?
No.
I wonder what you thought of Sylvia Plath, actually, because people would think it would be a natural fit, but I don't think so at all. Because you're very together, and she was very falling apart.
I'm going to tell on her. I shouldn't, but I will. I was interviewed in Maryland 20 years ago by a nice lady. And she said, I was in New York, working at Harper's Bazaar along with these golden lights. And I said, what happened? And she said, Sylvia Plath happened. And I said, what was that? And she said, she was in this bunch. And we were all together, and we were all doing this stuff. And then she wrote The Bell Jar and told on all of us.
She was one of those people.
Yes. And she told on all of us, and she told about the abortion that so-and-so had and the affair that so-and-so had. We could never look at each other again because these were secrets we had had. And in some cases, it broke up my marriage and it broke up somebody else's. Well, I write fiction. I never wrote somebody's life.
You've never done that?
Oh, no.
Never?
God did that. I shouldn't do that.
So without Frieda von Reichman, you would not have got out of it, possibly?
I would imagine not. I have often thought, and I cannot find any way, I can't find any place to go or way to go or group to go with to or any place that I can imagine that would have done this.
And what's happened to her? She must have passed away.
She died. She died the day David was born, our oldest son.
You have two sons, don't
you? Two sons.
Were you worried this would pass on to them?
Yeah.
Did you see any sign?
No.
Maybe it's through the female line. You know, some of these are gender specific.
I don't think so. Again, luckily, I grew up in an age that talked about nurture rather than nature. But yeah, I was afraid of it, and I think that was one of the things to hold over from the good old days. There are a few. One of them is a certain social minus for experience that I didn't have. I did a lot of things after, in a sense, making up for what I didn't have. But there's that. There are certain little bits and pieces that hang around from the old days, one of which being a fear of that being. Not of me going back, but of the kids.
Do you think you've had a choice whether or not you went back?
Oh, sure.
You've volitionally.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, explain that, because that's very, very interesting.
Would you like to go back? And you were in Dachau for 12 years. You want to go back?
So that's how you see it?
Yeah. You want to go back? No!
So when you see Dachau coming at you,
yeah.
What do you say?
Oh, I have things I do.
Tricks?
No, not tricks, really. The difference between sick and well, one of the big differences is that healthy people have innumerable things that they can do to underscore their health and maintain that and keep it. Get yourself a record of the Rudder Requiem and sing the alto part. Get yourself, go sing the Messiah, the whole thing. Talk to your husband, Albert. Talk to you, get with friends. Go skiing with friends. Go out and...
But this sounds very much like Weight Watchers when they teach you not to eat the trigger foods. It's very much the same sort of trigger mechanism. It's very interesting because there is an argument that people think you can't do this with mental weakness.
No, these things are all available to the healthy person and none of them are available to the sick person. So telling somebody, they used to tell me, you fix your hair, if you fix yourself up, if you do this, if you do that, Rosebud, it isn't going to work.
But isn't it extraordinary now? You wrote it in 62, I think, Rose Garden. Is that right?
I wrote it in 60.
Right.
It came out in...
And it is now 2006.
Yeah.
You've been happily married all this time.
50 years.
You have two sons. Presumably you have a fully functioning relationship with them.
Oh, yeah.
Most people
who
have never been... through any crisis whatsoever, would dream of achieving one-tenth of that, one-tenth of that picture.
It is a lovely picture. I mean, we don't have grandchildren, and if somebody said, doesn't it make you sad? And I think if I went to God with that, God would say, Joanne, who? Are you... All right, you got to be kidding. You're coming back and asking what?
Don't push your blood.
Exactly. Exactly.